This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, another bonus episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast, Terror Tuesdays, over at thatmomentin.com. I am very excited today because instead of talking to you by myself, I have brought along with me a guest to look at the 2002 French horror extreme movie called In My Skin. And with me today, I brought along with me Zoe Rose from the site Sobo with a Shotgun. Hello, Zoe. How are you?
Hello, Van. Thank you for having me. I am very, very good and looking forward to speaking about In My Skin, a very good French horror film.
Yes. And also for listeners, we're going to be talking about some of the worst and disappointed movies of 2017, and that will come after the review of In My Skin. And for an extra bonus, folks, I'm even going to put a timestamp on the show notes so you know where to go exactly for the worst movies and whatnot. So look for that on the site. But Zoe, before we begin here, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and about your site and everything you do online.
So I'm Zobo with a Shotgun. I don't own a shotgun, but I should.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm unprepared for the zombie apocalypse. But you know, my birthday's this month, so that's number one present that I've asked for.
Is the shotgun? Can you and Richard Hauer make a Zobo and a Hobo with a Shotgun kind of like movie together? That'd be a gift.
I think we should. I mean, maybe I should get in contact with him and, you know, propose that idea because I think it would be amazing.
I think it would be too.
I think it'd be an awesome movie. So watch this space.
Yes. All right. I'm gonna tweet the director of that right now and say, guys, Zobo, Hobo with a Shotgun.
I can't wait to hear what they say. I'm super excited. This year could be the year.
I love it. But yeah, I mean, what kind of things do you talk about on your site?
So on my site, I try and look at more extreme films, hence why you've probably asked me along to speak a bit about In My Skin. But I try to search out some of the most messed up films out there. This year, I'm going to get back onto looking at Cat 3. Japanese films, which was kind of a category that I actually took a bit of a break from for a while because I was kind of worried about my own mental stability from watching so many of these films. But now I feel like I'm going back to where my heart lies, and it's always the kind of really nasty, disturbing, gory films that inspire me to write more. So yeah, that's what I'm all about, finding things that other people don't want to watch.
Now, I've heard some of your guest spots on shows about disturbing features, but for my listeners who have never heard those episodes, has there ever been a movie that really just disturbed you too much or made you cringe? A movie that made you basically get really just freaked out by, that you had nightmares for a while?
So the the one film that I always mention, because it's the film that did that to me, and not many people have watched it, and I would not ever suggest for you to watch it, it's not a recommendation, is Tumbling Doll of Flesh. After watching that film, that was when I started to kind of question if it was okay to be watching these movies, and whether if someone got a hold of my internet history, that I would potentially go to jail for watching something like Tumbling Doll of Flesh.
Tumbling Doll of Flesh? Wait. My mom showed me this movie. It was like your a family mom. Classic around
no.
the house.
Wow, your house is more hardcore than mine.
we watch it every year at Christmas Eve.
It's quite heartwarming when you think about it.
No, I'm just kidding. I've never even seen this movie or heard of it.
Yeah, it's basically just a guy being forced into cutting body parts off a girl and then fucking every body part that's left and not left attached to her. And that's basically the entire film.
Really?
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, when they say torture porn, this is, you take that meaning and twist it into the exact words that are there. Yeah, it's out there, and I don't recommend anyone to watch it at all. Just don't. You don't need it in your life.
Okay, so basically, the Human Centipedes 1, 2, and 3 are way better to watch than this.
Yeah, you can watch that. You can definitely show that to your children compared to this. That's your Christmas family viewing trilogy, is the Human Centipede.
Wow, okay. All right, yeah, for me, because I'm kind of a lightweight, probably the movie that most disturbed me had to be Irreversible.
That is quite a disturbing film, and I actually did watch that with my parents.
Really?
Yeah, they were like, you need to, this was when I was still learning about cinema, and they said, oh, you want to learn about cinema and kind of messed up films, so they were like, let's have a family viewing of Irreversible, and that was a very, very uncomfortable moment in my life.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Can't believe your phone shows you that movie. Wow, okay. Man, alright. Well, moving on from that right there, because I think the only disturbing film I watched with my folks or my dad was Requiem for a Dream, but Irreversible doesn't compare the whole disturbing factor Requiem for a Dream. Ah, yeah, that's amazing. Alright, well, we're going to get into our conversation about In My Skin, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with our thoughts, all right?
We'll return after these messages.
Can we get some service around here?
A waitress is never around.
What is she doing to our food?
Wait a second, you actually order food here?
I thought we were eating.
I thought we were looking for a quiet place to talk about horror films and trash picks.
But you picked a diner for us to be at.
A diner that no one goes to? Look around, this place is practically condemned.
Well, I've accepted the fact they're more than likely spitting in our coffees.
Here you go. One vomit burger with Fromunda cheese.
That is the grossest thing I've ever seen.
Is now a good time to talk about a cannibal movie? Or should we save that for dessert?
Diner of Death is a Core Temp Arts podcast. Listen on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are available.
Hi there, my name is Damian Riley of the Damian Riley Podcast. You know, I've had a lifelong passion for movies, and my favorite reviewer I sort of started listening to as a child was Roger Ebert. I never knew him personally, but I always learned so much reading his stuff, and it really gets me excited about the movies. In addition to blogging, in the past 10 years I've started this podcast. It's challenging and very rewarding, I find, so I hope you join me and tune in to the Damian Riley Podcast. See you at the movies.
Back, everybody. Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast, Terror Tuesdays, here with our friendly guest, Zoe Rosemith, from the site Zobo with a Shotgun, here to talk about In My Skin, and I'm willing to bet a lot of our listeners have no idea what this movie is about. Now, I'd be willing to go through a plot description of this, Zoe, or do you want to?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, In My Skin is a movie written, directed, and starring Marina Devan, And it's about this woman, successful businesswoman, who, while one night at a party, she ends up falling, and she badly damages her leg. But she doesn't really notice it right away, like the pain for it, until she's at a doctor, and she gets more and more obsessed by the cuts on her body, and then she starts to make more cuts on her body, and her boyfriend and her best friend are starting to get worried about her, and she's becoming more and more detached. I do want to ask you this, Zoe. When did you first hear about this movie, and when did you see it, and what about it made you want to watch it?
So I first heard about this movie, I was just kind of researching online, and I was really getting into like foreign cinema, and I'd actually seen a copy of it in HMV. I hadn't bought it because I didn't know what it was about. So I went home and I was kind of, I was like, okay, let's have a look. What's this film about? And it was at a point as well when I really wanted to, I'd also just seen Inside. So obviously I was kind of looking at like French horror films. And after seeing that, I was like, oh, okay, I think French horror could be quite a good place to venture into. So I saw this DVD in HMV. So I went home and I was like, okay, let's watch a trailer. I actually read about the whole film before watching it just because I just wanted to know what it was about. And yeah, after reading it, I was like, okay, this sounds quite disturbing. And I found it on a few list sites where it was saying, you know, one of the most disturbing movies you'll see. And it also seemed to be quite underrated in the sense that it didn't seem to be, quite as well known as many of the other kind of like disturbing movies that are out there. So I decided, it was maybe, I would say probably about 4 years ago, I was having a movie night with about four of my friends, and I was always the one that chose the movie. So I chose this for us all to watch. And yeah, we can say that the week after that, I was not allowed to choose a movie. everyone was not impressed when we popped on In My Skin and started eating our pizza. Oh. Yeah, it's not quite a film that you want to eat to. So yeah, that was that. And then I rewatched it again actually yesterday. Because obviously we're speaking about it, so I thought I would rewatch it. And yeah, it was just as good the second time round.
Yeah. Now, for me, I first heard about this movie when I watched a movie. Okay, so this movie is directed by Marina Devan, and I watched an earlier movie that she wrote called Eight Women. Now, Eight Women is a French musical comedy murder mystery about eight women, and one of them may have been accused of killing the man of the house, all right? And it's a musical. And so when I read that this writer is going to be directing a movie and it's going to be a horror film, I got a little bit more intrigued by that, because when you go from one extreme, which is a lighthearted musical comedy, to a body horror film like this, I was very interested. So yeah, the first thing I ever saw from Marina Devan was The Eight Women that she only wrote, and I found she was directing this film, and I was like, oh, okay. And I remember getting my dad worked for a video distribution company, so we always got, like, you know, free screening cassettes and movies. And so this movie came in, and usually whenever they get like horror or anything art house or foreign, my dad just gives it over to me. And on the back of the VHS, and this would kind of intrigue me to watch it, it says, "Riveting, chilling, draws from the body horror of David Cronenberg and the feminine paranoia of Roman Polanski's Repulsion." And I originally, at the time when I first watched this, I have seen a few Cronenberg features, and I've seen Repulsion the night before, so I was very, very interested in watching this. And we're going to get into our favorite scenes here, but when I was watching the movie, Zoe, I became a little bit confused, and we're going to talk into that. because this is a movie, I mean, it is, what I describe in the plot is kind of what happens here. She goes to this party, and she cuts herself, and she becomes more and more obsessed about the cuts in her skin. I think that's going to lead me into my first moment, and my first moment of this movie has to be when her friend is visiting her. And I forget the name of the person that plays her friend. But she has a friend, I think her name is Justine. The woman's name is Esther. That's the woman played by Marina Devan. But I'm not quite sure who played her friend here.
Sandrine?
Sandrine. Thank you. Played by Leah Drucker. And she is in the bathroom. And she just finds out about the cuts on her leg. See, this is a tough one to talk about here. No, I mean, because she finds out about that she's going to be, you know, cutting herself, and she tries to figure out. No, I'm confusing my scenes here. All right, the scene I want to talk about, and I'm sorry, listeners, for this, is the moment when Esther actually they're both at work. And Esther actually admits to cutting herself at work and tries to, like, laugh it off with her coworker, right? Even though she is really disturbed and everything. And see, as a guy right here, it's really difficult for me to understand why she was doing this, all right? I mean, she actually does enjoy actually cutting into her skin, all right? And I don't know if she's doing this out of, like, pain or something else. Is it just pure pleasure? I always, because this woman does have a secret love affair with her body. And so when she's talking to her friend, she's, like, trying to be very honest and upfront about it. And then at the end, tries to laugh it off, and just kind of goes back to the, I guess we would call it like a warehouse, and cuts herself there. And I just want to ask you, Zoe, why do you think she starts this obsession with cutting?
I mean, like you said, it's the plot of the film is kind of very simple. It's exactly as you described it, and everything seems to spiral out of control almost within kind of the first 15 minutes. We're kind of thrown into this strange obsession that she's grown out of nowhere. What I think it is, I think it's almost kind of like a body dysmorphia type thing, almost like an eating disorder or, you know, lots of people, especially females, it seems to affect females a lot more, this kind of feeling almost, I think she feels very detached from her own body. And then when she has this, you know, she gets this cut and she genuinely doesn't seem to feel the pain when it happens for whatever reason that may be, then I think she becomes obsessed with the fact that, you know, she has her body, but she's so kind of detached from herself and her body, because she's kind of quite socially awkward as well anyway.
Yeah.
That I think that's where the obsession stems from, that she has a body that she can kind of mutilate and control, and it's the one thing in her life that she can control, yet it doesn't cause her the emotion that it should cause her. And that's where that kind of body dysmorphia stems from, is, you know, she is almost like detached from herself, but she uses it as a form of control, you know. But it also leads her, it's very strange because the obsession kind of starts leading her to become a lot more confident in herself, you know, like the way she is towards her friend. She becomes a little bit more outspoken, like you said, the scene where she openly admits to her, like, oh, I was cutting myself, ha ha ha, you know, it's, I don't know why I did it, it's quite funny. It's almost as if it's, she's kind of proud of this thing that she's developed. And then at work, she starts going for the, you know, for a better job. She's very proud of that. She becomes more ambitious. She wants to, you know, go and get the house. And it's very strange. It's almost as if this obsession suddenly gives her like this sense of confidence in herself, which, I mean, I don't know whether it's a real thing that could happen, but you know, there are people out there that have very strange kind of relationships with their body that, you know, they end up maybe not going quite to the extremes that she does in the film, but they have, you know, a weird obsession with something like that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point you bring up there too, about her becoming more confident after she does this. Also, you mentioned that she was a little bit like awkward, and I always kind of thought that scene was one friend telling another that they have a secret lover. You know, like, hey, coworker, I've just had an affair with someone, but the affair I have is with my own body and my skin. And the fact that you bring up that she was kind of like awkward in her life, and the only thing that she can control is her body, is fascinating there too, because she can't really seem to control her job, because earlier in the movie too, both her and her boyfriend are kind of struggling, and I think that he was looking at finding another job. The cool thing is too, Esther's boyfriend in the movie, and I forget his name right now, but when I pull up there, yeah, Vincent. I don't know, have you seen the movie Raw?
Yes, of course.
Okay, okay. Don, who am I asking here? Okay, he's the dad in Raw.
Ah, oh, amazing. I thought I recognized him.
Yeah, so yeah, Esther's boyfriend, Vincent, is the dad in Raw.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so he is. Now it all makes sense why he's into strange women, isn't he?
I know, right? Yes. he lets the really kinky side life right there. All right, awesome.
He's wow. He's my kind of guy.
Hey, kudos to him. All right, I'm all for that. See, but yeah, but it seems like, you know, like they're both kind of struggling, and then she becomes more and more obsessed with her body, because like you said before, it is something that she can control. And it gets to be the better of her, to the point where she's actually taking pieces of skin and trying to preserve them, and it doesn't work out so well for her. Actually, that's another scene I could talk about too, is the moment when she does try to preserve her skin and keep it fresh, and it doesn't work out the way she wants it to. She even tries to go to some sort of doctor, scientist, to ask them about how to preserve skin, because it seems to be the only thing that she actually loves and craves is that skin. But yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like a child and a trophy to her. She's, you know, when she's there asking all the questions about, oh, how do I keep it? How do I keep it soft and nice? It's, I mean, that seems very uncomfortable. And yet the I think he's a pharmacist, maybe. Mm-hmm. He's completely oblivious to why she's doing it at all. You know, he's not even weirded out by the questions.
Zoe, he's got to make a living, all right? He probably doesn't get much business, so when some crazy woman has pieces of her skin, he's got to be like, well, yeah, I could probably report her, but I've got house payments to make, all right? So fuck it, all right? Let's get this over with, all right? But yeah, I do want to talk more about your scene, because before we began the show, your scene was the one that I wanted to talk about a little bit the most there. And it is the dinner party sequence, but I'll let you explain this.
So the dinner party sequence. So Esther goes to a dinner party with her boss and some clients, and they're talking about economics and politics and countries that they like and they don't like, kind of, you know, general boring dinner talk. And she starts to have kind of this thing where her arm has a life of its own, and it starts mushing her food, and obviously it's very strange. And then after that happens for a little bit, she looks down at her arm and her arm is completely detached from the rest of her arm. So it's almost cut in half at the elbow and it's lying limply on the table next to her dinner plate, and she's staring at it with quite, I would say, terror. She's staring at it with terror, kind of, you know, touching it and realizing that, you know, somehow her arm is not attached to her at all. And the reason I love this scene so much is I think this is the point in the film that we as the audience really begin to understand her mindset and where she is and why she's doing what she's doing. And how I said earlier that, you know, it's kind of like her control, and that she's obviously feeling quite detached. That's obviously the pinnacle point where you see fully that her kind of mental disorder is a fact that she sees her limbs as kind of detached from the rest of her, and that's why she can mutilate them kind of without feeling and with a sense of pleasure.
Oh, okay, because like every time I watch this scene, I think I miss a cut where she puts her arm under the table and puts on a fake arm. And I thought she did that on purpose to see if anyone else notices. Like, if anyone else notices her. Like, she feels so invisible. She's definitely not a part of this high-class, prestigious world right there. And they're all talking about their homes in France, their fancy homes and everything. And she's not part of that world. So, as a joke, she puts up a fake arm just to see if anyone else notices her at all. And no one does. No one pays attention. She's kind of sitting there quietly going through dinner, just kind of like making, you know, and she does do small remarks and they do kind of look over at her, but no one ever notices the fake arm. All right?
No, not at all.
And I see her stabbing the arm right there. And I really thought she's putting the arm up there, a fake arm up there, so she can kind of like cut herself under the table and not have anyone else notice her. And that's why she does that. But when you hear it, when I hear you describe the scene, the fact that she feels herself being attached, that is her actual arm, she's become detached. And that is why she actually does the thing she does. That shit's just fascinating for me. Yeah, I always thought that she put a fake arm up there so she can actually just cut herself underneath, because she's just so sick and tired of this bourgeois fancy bullshit that all these fucking assholes are saying and trying to be more important than the nest. These are the type of people that Patrick Bateman would be comfortable with talking to, all right?
Yes, yeah. And, the exact type of people.
Yeah, and so I thought that, well, she just feels very just kind of upset and nervous, and that's why she puts her arm up there, so she can cut herself, so she can have a little bit more satisfaction, something she can control. And that's what the scene means for me, the fact that she is out of her element and just want to have something that she can control. And I may be wrong about this, Zoe, but I think after this scene is when she does actually check herself into a hotel and begin her kind of downward.
No, I really like your take on it as well. I didn't think of it that way, but I think it's definitely that way as well. Whether it's either way, I think they're both right in a sense that they, you know, the way we've both taken it completely portrays exactly how she's feeling in both senses. You know, she is, you know, like the job she's at, it's she doesn't fit in at all with the client. She has no idea what they're speaking about, no care for what they're speaking about at all. And like you said, her only kind of desire at that time and satisfaction comes from cutting herself.
Yeah.
And it does give her a way to, you know, underneath the table, start cutting her arm up, and no one, and that's something you would, you know, if you're at a dinner table, you would think you would notice if the other person was cutting their arm under the table, and they don't at all. Like you said, and it's kind of, you know, she feels almost as if a ghost. You know, she doesn't seem to have many friends. Everyone kind of seems to ignore her. But the only time, like, her boyfriend seems to pay a lot of attention to her whenever she's cut herself. But all the other times he's not like that invested in her.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why she does like the fake arm thing. To, again, like you said, to kind of test whether anyone will notice, anyone will even pay any attention to her. And no, they just speak about Lisbon and Rome and random bullshit.
Yeah. And the weird thing, too, you talked about, you know, her her boyfriend. I think also her friend, I'm going to fuck up the name of that name, too. Philip? No, not Philip here. Her blonde friend, her cute blonde friend.
Sandrine,
all right. It kind of seems to me, too, that when she does tell her about things that happen with her, Sandrine seems concerned, but also is more concerned with herself, because she seems to be a person that's about status. And
yes,
if her friend is doing this, what's that say about her? She's like, well, why am I hanging out with this person? All right, like, Sandrine's there saying, if my friend's cutting herself, what's that going to say about me? What if we go to business meetings and this happens?
Yeah, well, it's like the swimming pool scene. It goes for that, you know, her friend is clearly very, very uncomfortable at the, oh, I mean, she tells her about the job promotion. She's like very kind of doubts her. And keep saying, well, if you think you can do the job. And then obviously the guys tried to put her in the pool when she's it's where her hand is grabbing Sandrine's like pool chair, and you can see it's, you know, she's holding on for dear life, and Sandrine just looks at it and doesn't care, you know, like you said, just is more concerned with her kind of social status and what will happen if she's like, oh no, leave her alone, la la la, and just lets them torment Esther.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, yeah, now, I was thinking about this over here. After the gym party sequence here, she goes more into her dark recess here. Why do you think she goes to the extreme lengths here of cutting herself right there? Because this is something that I've seen the movie a few times here. I've seen it at least about 3 or 4 times, and I still don't understand why, all right? I think her performance is good. I understand, you know, she feels detached from the world right there. I get that. But what I don't understand is the whole, like, really, she actually cuts huge portions of her skin off her body and wants to preserve it. That's the question I have for you right now, Zoe. Why? I get the cutting, you know, you get pain right there and let it heal, but she actually cuts huge chunks of her skin off and tries to preserve it. Why do you think she does this?
I'm not entirely sure, but again, I think it's maybe she's kind of, it's almost kind of like a trophy to her. And a reminder of, you know, this, I don't know, I think in a sense that maybe she tries to keep the skin because in one way she knows what she's doing is wrong, and it's very horrific and very wrong, because there's times, you know, she cries when she sees the skin that she kept in her purse, because I think it's her kind of trying to remind herself that what she's doing is fucked up beyond belief. She's, you know, she is destroying her relationship with her boyfriend. She's destroying her friendship. She's destroying her career. As confident as she may seem, in one moment, in the next moment, she seems almost, kind of powerless to this obsession that she's gained. And I think that keeping the skin, it's almost, for me, it's almost like Jekyll and Hyde. One moment, keeping the skin for her is kind of like a trophy, signifies her obsession. But then I think in another moment for her, the skin is actually almost a reminder to herself of what she's doing, and that, you know, she, it will need to stop at some point. Mm-hmm. And I purely think that because of the scene where she's at the cash point and she finds the skin that she is obviously cut off and put in her purse, which is not normal behavior at all. And at first she looks at it and she looks kind of happy that she's got it. And then she starts crying, and it almost seems as if she's like, you know, oh yes, the pleasure of having this skin. And then she realizes, like, actually no, you know, because she's seen it, she's like, I'm cutting my skin off. It's kind of what's wrong with me. But again, it's quite hard to know, because it's kind of, it's so out there. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure why she's keeping her skin.
Now, I have a kind of a weird theory, all right? And you may disagree with me, but I think In My Skin could be a sequel to Raw. Like, Raw's a prequel, and In My Skin could be an unofficial sequel.
That could be very true, you know.
Because the young girl in Raw is all about cannibalism, and there's even a scene in Raw where she does chew on her own arm.
Yeah, she starts eating herself. She's obsessed with other people. They hold big, big similarities. And obviously, Raw, she's just much younger.
Yeah. So I figured that Raw could be the unofficial prequel to In My Skin, to find out exactly how she got this way. Although they have completely different names, I don't know. I figured you could watch both Raw and In My Skin in a French double feature of a extreme horror. And I know that In My Skin is not as extreme as Inside and probably a few others that I can't think of right now. What are your general, you know, grade and final thoughts about In My Skin?
Generally, I think it's a great film for the kind of disturbing and messed up subgenre of horror. I mean, it's it really does kind of take, like I said, for me, I see it as kind of like a body dysmorphia condition that she has, very similar to something, you know, like anorexia, mm-hmm. Or bulimia, obviously slightly more extreme. But I think there is an actual dysmorphia thing where people feel their limbs do not belong to them. Mm-hmm. I think that's an actual thing. So I think it's similar to that, slightly more extreme in the way she goes about it. But I think it's I think it's great because obviously it's directed and written by a woman, something that's we always need more of. I just think it kind of really, in a sense, in a horror way, signifies something that a obsession, a you know, mental disorder that lots of people do face in that kind of way, something they become so obsessed with. And it's one moment it's kind of their confidence booster, and the next minute it also, you know, much like anorexia, one minute someone with anorexia feels great about themselves because they haven't eaten in days and they think they look amazing, but the next minute they're breaking down, crying, seeing themselves in the mirror. And I think In My Skin kind of personifies that relationship people have with body dysmorphia issues. And I think it's quite powerful in that sense. And obviously it's nice and gory and fucked up. So yes. That's always a good way. Good thing.
good way to put a message out there. It was really fucked up and gory. Yeah. Even though I really didn't understand so much of the cut-in, I did understand her sense of isolation and not being a part of something. She doesn't really feel connected with her relationships, doesn't feel connected with her friends or anything else in the world. And at times, we've all felt that moment in our life. And so I understand that part of it. I think Marina Devan does a wonderful job holding all three roles of being the writer, director, and lead star of this. And she actually does do a good job of making you understand her turmoil. She makes you feel the joy of her self-mutilating and also the pain as well. Like Zoe was saying before, too, with people who suffer from anorexia, the joys and pains of both. And I think Maria Devan does a wonderful job. And I think the only movie that she did after this was called Don't Look Back, with Monica Bellucci.
Yes.
And I have not seen that yet. I don't know if you have.
No, I've not seen it either.
Okay. All right. That may be what I'll do for another future episode, because it's got Monica Bellucci. So, yes, I definitely want to check that out. But if you had to give this one a grade, Zoe, what would you give it out of, like, 10?
For me, I think I'd give it a 7.
7 out of 10 here? All right.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, actually, no. Sorry. We destroyed it out of 5. I'm sorry. Out of 5.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Out of 5, a 3.5, if we're allowed points.
Yeah, it's fine. 3.5 here. Yeah, I think I'll give about... I'm going to give mine just like 3 stars, actually. I think the performances are really good. I have a hard time just understanding the motivation. And maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not a movie where I'm supposed to understand everything. Maybe it's a movie that doesn't need to be explained all the time. We're getting to the headset of this young woman who does these things. And maybe it's not for us to understand. And that's okay. All right. And all characters need to be understood. I understand their motivations. She does have a character arc change, which I love. Because a lot of the movies we're going to talk about in our disappointed films do not. But yeah, I think that's going to wrap up our section of In My Skin, unless you had any other final thoughts about the movie.
No, I think that's everything.
All right, yeah, so I think we both highly recommend the movie. We're going to take another small break right now. We're going to play a few more ads from other great podcast shows, and then we'll be back to talk about the most disappointed or hated movies of 2017.
We'll return after these messages.
All right, guys, so we need to record our top 3 reasons why you should listen to French Toast Sunday podcast.
Number 3 should definitely be our diverse opinions.
Number 2 should probably be our top 3 lists that we do every week.
No, it's gotta be Mark Wahlberg.
What about Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
It's gotta be Fighting the Sadness in the Swamp of Sadness.
Full Frontal.
Stories about being lost at sea.
Brendan Fraser being underground.
Helen Mirren's boobs.
Baltimore accents as heard in The Wire.
Underclaus.
Crepes.
Character studies.
Wait, guys. What about movies?
Nah. Tree rape.
Tree rape? Yeah, I like tree rape.
Tune in every Friday for a new episode of French Toast Sunday podcast, brought to you by us at FrenchToastSunday.com.
Clothing made out of Burger King wrappers.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everybody. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial over at www.audibletrial.com/cinemarecall. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. So sign up today and get your free audio download book. Again, that site is audibletrial.com/cinemarecall. Now, enjoy the show.
We'll be right back.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast, Terror Tuesdays. We just got done talking about Marina Devan's In My Skin, but right now we're going to really torture each other by talking about some of our most hated and disappointed films of 2017. I'm going to let Zoe here start with your list, and we'll just kind of compare and contrast our lists, all right? So if you like a 5-1 list them off. What were your five most disappointed films of 2017?
Okay, so the first one, and you won't be happy with this, is The Love Witch.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go back to that.
Okay.
The second one was War for the Planet of the Apes.
Really? Okay, wow, yep. I love that one. All right.
Third one was Death Note.
Okay.
fourth one was Atomica. And okay. The fifth one is actually a movie that I don't think many people... It's not a big one. It's kind of an indie one, but it's called Inoperable.
Oh. Why does that sound so familiar?
It's got Danielle Harris in it from Scream. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we did a review about that on the site, and the premise of that sound really interesting. Oh, time warp thing?
Yeah. The premise sounds great, and then you sit in a screener and you watch it, and it's far from great. Really far from great.
I thought she's like, sort of, they're like in a hospital, but they're stuck in some sort of time warp, right?
Yeah, and it sounds, the premise sounds really good. And that's why I actually saw one of the first showings of it. It was at a film festival called Fear NYC in New York. And I was there for a film that I'm working on. And I kind of renamed it Unwatchable rather than Inoperable because it was quite awful. Was very disappointed, actually, because the premise sounds great, you know, with the time warp in the hospital. It could be really creepy, and it's, Danielle Harris, she's done some good things, but it was really, really bad. It was, it was very tiresome to watch and very tedious, and because of this time warp thing, it just... it's kind of on a loop, but that loop is almost the same loop with slight dialogue changes, slight different corridors, but that goes on for about an hour and a half. And, and then the kind of finale of the film is probably one of the most lazy, uninventive ideas to end a film ever. It was you could see it coming from a mile off. It was just one of those, oh, she's crazy and she's in the hospital, and that was basically the film.
Now, since I have you okay, so lazy film, bad, right? Okay, so Inoperable, very watchable, although I still kind of watch it because of Danielle Harris. I may give it a shot. Even though I'm probably
go for it. I'm not, after watching that, I'm not a massive fan of Danielle Harris in it now, because I didn't think she was as good as she has been in other things. I think it was probably one of the worst things she's performed in. But, that's just my opinion. Some people might like it. You like The Love Witch, so you might like this.
Oh, All right. What was the number one thing you hated about The Love Witch here? Because I saw The Love Witch back in 2016, and you watched it this year.
Yeah.
Did you rent it? Did you watch it in theaters? Or?
I rented it out.
Okay.
Because we were meant to have... there was another podcast, wasn't there, on it. So I watched it in preparation for that. Unfortunately, I missed the podcast.
I think that was my podcast for the Lambcast.
Yeah, when I went it was for the yours. Movie of the month. Yeah, it was yours. And unfortunately, I missed it because I was really looking forward to talking about it with you. but...
We should have gone back and do a full episode about The Love Witch so you can watch it again.
You know, maybe we don't do that. For me, I just found it to be... I mean, I kind of knew going in that it was going to be a bit slow, but I found it very, very... I mean, probably one of the slowest films I've ever watched. I found it very boring. I mean, the dialogue was almost unbearable for me to listen to. I hated the Love Witch herself. I found her despicable. She pissed me off so, so much. And I just found it really pretentious. I was just like, it's trying so hard to be this film, and it's just... and then I got to the end and I was like, thank fuck for that.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. I was cutting me deeper, Zoe. But it's cool. It's cool. All the things you say that you hate about the movie, I kind of like it. I like the look of it. I like the cheesy soundtrack to it, though. I like how it looked like an older film from the 60s and 70s. I kind of like the character of Elaine, how she keeps seducing these guys, it keeps backfiring on her, and I find that to be very funny. I know the director herself had different takes on the film. In fact, me and her got into a small little debate online about how critics misinterpreted her film. And I was like, yes, but whenever you release art into the world, it's going to be misinterpreted by some... Don't get upset by it. And then she wrote back, like, well, I should have the right to see my feelings and everything. And I'm like, okay, yes, you're right. You can definitely see your feelings right there. And all I was just saying is that whenever anyone releases anything out into the world as art, people are trying to make their own assumptions about what you mean with it. That's just what art does for people, and that's all. So when you watch The Love Witch, you're going to find different things with it. And yes, I can understand why people dislike the movie. And I can understand fully why people love it. I'm one of the people that actually does enjoy it. And I will admit it, I enjoy it mainly for the style of it, the look of it. And if you want to call me pretentious for that, fuck it, I don't care. I think it looks like great. But no, that's a great list of movies you have there. My list of movies are... I'm going to put probably a few titles on there that are going to be disappointed. These are movies that I was just mainly disappointed in. I mean, they had a great trailer for it, great cast. It looked like it could be good, but the result was bad. And I'm not going to do a 1 through 5, even though my listeners may want me to do this. I may have to do a separate episode and actually talk about these in more detail. But for me, my most disappointing movies of 2017 were T2, Trainspotting, Atomic Blonde, The Last Jedi, Downsizing, and Alien Covenant.
Yes.
Those are the ones.
I agree with you on that was one I missed off. Alien Covenant was very disappointing. And I was really excited for a new Alien, and then that happened.
I was too. It's basically just a retread of Alien, but with none of the interesting characters. I didn't understand the point of David being back in this version again. I thought Prometheus was better than this, and I did not like Prometheus that much.
Yeah, no, but I feel exactly the same. I didn't love Prometheus. I thought it was kind of, it was okay. But yeah, this was even worse. I kind of knew in a sense that I was going to be disappointed with it, because I always am when there's something I'm really excited about. But yeah, it was a big letdown when it could have been really good.
And my problem with the movie too is that I didn't care about any of the characters. They all had wives or something. They all had like significant others, but they're never really mentioned. All the kill scenes seem to be pointless. These are just really just kind of like dumb characters. And if this is supposed to be a sort of like prequel to Alien, it still feels like it's taking place in the same universe as the first one. Like,
yes.
This is another crew that stumbled upon this ship or this planet. Everything that Alien did in their plot, Alien Covenant does the same thing, but in a much more lazy way. It kind of feels like, do you remember that movie Be Kind Rewind with
yes.
Jack Black and Mos Def? This is like their version of Alien, of doing like a really cheap ass version, but just with a bigger budget. All right.
Yeah. And, yeah. No, I agree.
And oh gosh, I'm trying to remember the name of that one guy now. He was in Danny McBride.
Yes. Yes. He's in the kind of like Seth Rogen movies.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to really understand any of his plot motivations or the other characters' plot motivations. And I know there's going to be listeners out there saying that, well, you didn't get it because this person here is connected with this person and David is supposed to be part of this other team. And when I was putting this list together, I just went through all the movies I saw in 2017. And I'm like, okay, well, that was good. That was good. That was bad. That was bad. And I made my list from that. Atomic Blonde is a movie that had a great trailer for it. And I was just really disappointed with the actual storyline. Because, like you said about The Love Witch, I found Atomic Blonde to be very dull and boring. It had some great sequences of action, but the rest of it I found to be just very dull. And I hate the use of music in Atomic Blonde. I don't know, have you seen Atomic Blonde?
No, I haven't seen it, no. I got my hair cut like hers, but I haven't seen the film.
Okay, well, you would be a much better person in that movie, all right? Your film would have, like, more body mutilations and some really fucked up gory shit, and I would watch that to the nth degree, all right? Because after you kick someone's ass, you probably devour an arm off or something, and it'd be just awesome to watch. But Atomic Blonde, despite a few cool action sequences, I hate it when movies use very standard 80s music or like the most popular tunes and make it seem like it's fresh and new.
It's quite lazy. I think one of the great things about films is sometimes it's okay to use kind of like a mainstream song, but a lot of the time it's really nice to watch a film and you almost discover new music because you can tell they've researched music that fits really well, but isn't just, you know, you type into Google 80s music and you go 1, 2, 3, we'll pop them in the film.
They've
kind of, you know, put effort into that side as well.
It's supposed to be set, like, during a specific time, like, after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the music that they played in the area were stuff from, like, the early 80s, stuff from, like, the late 80s. Nothing from that particular year when that happened. And there's a bunch of really great songs that came out. I think that was, like, 88, 89 that came out that year. But I'm hearing songs from, like, 82 and 83. Like, no... Kids in that time period would not be playing songs from, like, early 80s or even late 80s. And I hate, too, when movies use, like, a modern version of an 80s song to pass it off as it was in that time period. That just really messes up my whole time frame. I'm like, wait, I thought this was set in, like, 87, 88. Why am I hearing a 2016 version of a song that was made for that year? And then I mentioned before, like, Last Jedi, which I'm going to get a lot of flack about, but I liked the movie when it was called Return of the Jedi, because it follows the same... that's not going to be any huge spoilers, but if you've seen Return of the Jedi, you'll know what I'm talking about, because a lot of the... There's a lot of scenes that are basically scene for scene... moments of Return of the Jedi are in The Last Jedi. So,
I hate Star Wars. I am not a Star Wars fan. So I'm not even gonna see. I mean, I have no. I saw the. I don't know. I don't know how many new ones there are of the new ones. I saw the first new one of the new ones. I think
the
maybe
Phantom, the Force Awakens.
Yes, that okay. I think so. I saw that. I knew I would hate it because I don't like Star Wars, and my boyfriend wanted to see the ones that have come after that, and I said no. So I think he might have watched them at the cinema on his own, but I didn't go. I'm not into it.
All right. Well, I like Star Wars, but I'm a fan of just the original stuff right there. I'm not like a diehard, like, has to see all the TV shows and prequels to read the books. I know there's people out there that are, and hey, my hat's off to you, all right? I'm not just in your taste and everything like that, too, but I can understand that. And I think the other disappointing film I saw that I want to talk about is Downsizing. That one with Matt Damon, when him and his wife get to be shorter. And it's horrible. It's not funny. All the funny parts are in the beginning of the movie. Matt Damon is an idiot douchebag at the start of the movie. And at the end, he is an idiot douchebag who still gets the girl. And I'm like, all right. He has, like, no change at all. He lives, like, this boring life. Decides to become smaller to save money. Still is dull and boring when he's small. He meets up with this crippled girl. Wants to try to save her family. Gets involved with this other group that wants to live underground somewhere in some sort of like Wicker Man cult, and he has to debate if he wants to go live with them or not, and he just doesn't have any change of character. I'll talk about this on another show, I know I will. But yeah, any other disappointing movies you had on your list there, Zoe?
There was Death Note.
Death Note, that's right, okay.
Yeah,
That was the Netflix movie, right? The Netflix one?
Yeah, the Netflix one. Okay. I watched, was it in a film or a series before? The Japanese.
Yeah, it was a Japanese anime series, yeah.
Yeah, I watched that with my dad, because my dad quite likes things like that. So I watched that with my dad, and I remember it being very, very creepy, and I really loved the kind of concept of, you know, the story. So then when I saw Adam Wingard, who I have always loved.
The guy who made Your Next.
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved him. I didn't love his Blair Witch take, but
he did that. That's right, he did do the Blair Witch. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I always loved him, and then I saw that and I was like, loving you a little bit less, but it's okay. And then I saw that he'd done a Death Note, and I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to love it. And I mean, I didn't hate it. It wasn't the worst film I've ever seen, but I was really, really disappointed. It brought nothing new to the story at all. It just, there's no need in it. It's just not needed. And the characters are quite dislikable. I mean, there's nothing about them that is really interesting. The story is quite bland, and I found it quite confusing as well. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not, because I still want to watch the anime series. After you watched the movie, were you sending out death threats to Adam Wingard?
I kind of thought about it. Yeah, I did get my notebook out. I got my notebook out and was like, right, let's see what happens here. But I mean, the only thing I kind of liked was William Dafoe as Ryuk, the kind of demon thing. But that's just because William Dafoe is kind of creepy in himself. It was really disappointing. It's just a bit over the top, and it's very kind of over the top, like, well, let's try and make Death Note the biggest Netflix film ever, and it failed a lot.
A lot of those Netflix films have some of them have been great, some of them have been kind of bad. I watched The Babysitter on there.
Yeah.
I did not like that.
No, I my friend actually, he messaged me and he was like, oh, I just watched The Babysitter. It's the most like intelligent, fresh, you know, daring movie I've seen. So I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. My boyfriend was like, yeah, The Babysitter looks hot. We're going to watch this movie. So we put it on and we were both like, oh God, this is just, I mean, it's nothing. Everything my friend described it as is the opposite of that. It's so not original. It's just, you know, I mean, it's so boring. Nothing happens.
What I wanted for that movie is that I wanted the reveal of the babysitter to be a Satanist to be a little bit more hidden. Like I want the little kid to discover new things each day about the babysitter. But yeah. Then the first night, the kills happen right away. Because I thought it was going to be a movie where he believes the babysitter to be evil, but no one else believes him.
Yeah, I thought it would be the same. That would be more kind of, you know, over time.
Yeah.
He's like in love with her, but he starts discovering more things about her and it's quite subtle. And then, yeah, nearer the end, it turns out there's this whole like satanic cult, you know, and the cool kids are killing, which is, you know, something that isn't quite often done. But yeah, like you said, within 10 minutes, it's like, oh, okay, they're in a satanic cult. She's evil. He did like her. Now he's got to try and run away from her and her friends. And then that was it.
This is a kid who is like always kind of very shy and scared of everything too. And like in a matter of minutes, he's able to put together all these things and stand up to her. It's like, it's a change of character, but it's just so fast. It doesn't make any sense at all. And
no, not at all.
I found the leads to be very kind of like dull and boring. And even the kills were not all that interesting. Just very kind of standard ways of... one movie that I do need to watch, I haven't watched it yet, is Better Watch Out.
I've not heard that one.
Better Watch Out is about this... it's about a babysitter watching her brother or I guess someone that she's hired to babysit for. And some bad guys come into the house to try to, like, break into it to kill people. And both her and the kids fight back. And they fight back with, like, gory glee.
Wow. That sounds cool. That sounds interesting. And that's the kind of babysitter you want as well.
Yeah. So that's why I was, like, I'm really excited to check that out. I think this one's on Shudder, if you have the Shudder.
Yes, I've got Shudder.
So I think it's on there. I haven't watched that one yet. I think I've got the DVD, but I haven't opened it up yet. Waiting for a good day for that. I might watch the one tonight, because the babysitter was a piece of shit.
Yes. I'm glad we agree.
Yes. We agree on something here, all right? We may disagree on, like, Love Witch, but we both agree that babysitter was trash. And I think we agree on a lot of our other movies that were bad, too. We both agree that Alien Covenant was a waste of time.
Yeah.
If they do any other Alien movies, maybe not have Ridley Scott direct it, because he obviously wants to just remake Alien again.
Just over and over.
And I'd much rather have him just release Alien, because that movie is a classic, and just do it that way. I think that's wrap up this episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. Zoe, tell the listeners out there what you have coming up there. Plug away.
As it's a new year, there's nothing much new on my site currently, but I'm in the middle of writing, I think it's 7 film reviews, bit over my head on that one, but, on my site, I'm going to have, a film review of Mother very soon. I know a few people waiting to read that one from me.
Without any like bit spoilers here, did you like it? Did you hate it?
I loved it. I loved every second of it. Yeah.
You did? Zoe, I love you. You're part of my family now, because I too enjoyed every second of that movie. Oh, that's good to hear. Okay.
Yes. So I have a review of that on Sober with a Shotgun very soon, so everyone can find out what I thought. And then I've got, I can't remember the names of them, but there's three horror shorts and a couple of feature films that I've reviewed for The Horrorcist, and they'll be up within the next week. So keep your eyes out. And in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter, Zobo with Shotgun, and tweeting about things like dropping my lunch on the floor today and crying. And horror movies, so, yeah.
Oh, no more dropping lunch on the lunch floor there, Zoe. Apologize that happened to you. As always, you can listen to our episodes of the Cinema Recall podcast over at the site thatmomentin.com. We are featured on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, Player FM. Just type in the name thatmomentin.com when you do so and search for our show, Cinema Recall. We are on a network with a bunch of other great podcasts such as TV Good, Sleep Bad, the Asian Cinema Podcast, and Game Warp. But that's wrap up within right now. We will be back hopefully next week with some other Terror Tuesday episodes. I know that I want to put together my review of Proud Mary, the new sort of like black exploitation film, so that review will be coming out either that weekend or the week after, but look for that. We are on Twitter, we are at @cinema_recall. You can find us on Facebook. Zoe, did you mention your Twitter account?
Yes, it's okay, at Zobo with Shotgun.
At Zobo with Shotgun, yes. Tell me to follow on there. I'll put links to her stuff, too, on our site. But yeah, I just want to say to everyone, thank you for listening. A big thank you to our guest, Zoe Rose Smith, for coming on the show and talking about body horror. I asked for my guest, Zoe, will you be back again to talk about a feature, horror or not, either horror or non-horror?
Yes, of course. Yes.
You will, okay. I kind of want to talk to you in detail about Mother, maybe at a later time too, because there's a lot to dive into that movie. Or maybe you should pick a horror film that I've never seen before.
I would love to speak about Mother, because I feel that I need to speak about Mother properly.
Okay.
Because I'm... All right. But in the meantime, I'll also try and think of a horror film that you haven't seen that we could discuss at some point as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you again soon. All right. Good night.